all other officials, the representatives from parliamentary legal services, as well as from the State Law Advisors Office, welcome all to this meeting. My apologies, my humble apologies for actually starting a bit late, but I tried to indicate at 9 o'clock the reasons for that. I see most members have actually joined, are currently on the platform. If I may just confirm, we have Honorable Nikolakis, Honorable Hadere, Honorable Dango, Honorable Seleku, Honorable Motsamai, Honorable Bartlett, Honorable Maleka, you just confirm your presence because you're using another name on a gadget, but I'll give you an opportunity. The names keep jumping, so I'm not sure if I missed out any Honorable Zidobu. I'm not sure if I missed out any other member.
No, I'm here. I'm here.
Yes, yes. No, sorry, because as people join, the names jump. So I think I might have missed some names, but yeah. Welcome, and Honorable Maleka, just confirm your presence as well. Honorable Maleka, I think you mentioned that you're using your daughter's gadget. Honorable Maleka?
Yes, okay. Secretary, I'm in. And also, Honorable Dlamini is there.
Okay, Honorable Dlamini, Honorable Ndongeni. I think, yeah, we probably have like a full house. Okay, thank you very much. Welcome once again and to everyone present on this platform. Just in terms of what has transpired in our meeting on Friday, the 11th of November, we received a briefing from the content advisor on the public comments that we received on the bill, as well as a briefing from the legal advisor on the tagging of the bill as a Section 75 form. In terms of today's proceedings, we'll receive responses from the Department of Home Affairs on the public comments, responses from the Independent Electoral Commission on the public comments, and also the parliamentary legal advisors will also make an input into the process. And I think thereafter, honorable members will then engage the three presentations. What we'll also do is maybe allow a 5 or 10 minute break between presentations so that our members can reflect, be given time to reflect on some of the issues. I think then, let me then hand over to the Department of Home Affairs, to yourself, Minister, to start the process. Honorable Minister, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, as a response to the question presented to us, naturally we gave those to our senior counsel because quite a number of the questions that were asked were about the law, the legality of what we are doing. So we gave them to senior counsel who has written a memo for us. Unfortunately, the senior counsel could not be available today. So the DG will take us through the memo because they are explaining each and every question and answer. So even if they are not here, I'm sure the memo is self-explanatory. The DG will take us through it. DG, please.
Good morning, Minister. Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members. Through you, Chair, I'm just asked for permission to terminate the video because of the connectivity that's not great. But I'm also joined by colleagues from the department, so in particular from the ministry. It's the Deputy Minister is also in attendance, Chair. And then there's Mudupi Maiselakamduli, Muzin Joko, and Riaz Musa, including Advocate Malakate. that have joined us. So, Minister, what we've done, as we said previously to the chair, we've clustered the responses in terms of thematic areas as they've been raised. There are comments that are of a general nature, and we are willing to respond to some of those issues, even if it's in writing further, if there's other further work that needs to be done. So we'll then go through the responses. There are seven areas that Chairperson will deal with. The first one will be the reserving of the 200 seats in the National Assembly for political parties. And then I'll then deal with the issue of the discarded votes or wasted votes in courts. And of course, the proportional representation for independent candidates. And then the third area that we'll deal with, Minister and Chairperson, is the long-term and broader electoral reform. And then the fourth one will look at the allocation of seats in the National Assembly vis-a-vis the provincial legislatures, and then the issue around vacancies, and then independent candidates contesting more than one region. And then the last focus area will be the signature requirement. Let me then start with the first one. In terms of the comments that were received, there were concerns that were raised in some quarters that the 200 seats that are reserved only for political parties and excluding independent candidates from contesting some of those seats, it's unfair. And you'll recall, Chair, that the Council has previously expressed the view that reserving half the seats in the National Assembly for political parties for the purposes of achieving overall proportionality generally, and from their own advice that they've provided to us, is that it is not unfair, and it will likely be found to be constitutionally permissible. This is in response to the first issue that's been raised. And further, Council then expatiated by indicating that Section 157, 2 and 3 of the Constitution expressly contemplates an electoral system at local government level that balances, of course, Chair, the participation of independent candidates and proportional party representation in a similar fashion. And Council further advises that if you were to look at subsection 2, which requires that national legislation must prescribe a system for the election of members of a municipal council, and the first part then deals, Chair, with the proportional representation based on that municipality segment of the National Common Voter Roll, and which provides for the election of members from list of party candidates drawn up in a party's order of preference. And the second part of that, which is B, deals with the proportional representation as described in the paragraph above that I've just indicated, combined with a system of ward representation based on that municipality segment of the National Common Voters Roll. And if you were to go further to subsection 3, which requires that an electoral system in terms of subsection 2 must result in general in proportional representation. And I think, Chairperson, you'll recall that in the New Nation Movement matter, in particular, this comment that the Council has reminded us of by Justice Matlanga, who commented on this provision and indicated that when considering the participation of independent candidates in national and provincial elections, undermine the proportional requirements of the Constitution, this is what is stated, and I quote, Justice Matlanga states that it is quite plain from the provisions of Section 1573 of the Constitution that proportional representation is quite possible where there is a combination of representation through party lists and representation by individuals who need not be attached to political parties. And he further expatiates why he's saying so, and he states that in respect of the election of members of a municipal council, if we're to look at Section 1572, it empowers Parliament to pass legislation that prescribes a system where members are exclusively elected through party lists, and then he cites Section 1572A, Section 1572B, Section 1572A, and of course 2B. And in that, he says that is so because in respect of ward representation under Section 157B, certainly does admit of independent candidates representation, and that is because in respect of ward representation, the section is silent on party participation, and the further states that it matters not that in ward representation some, even most individual candidates may in fact be sponsored by political parties. But Justice Madlanga further states that if you were to look at section 1573, which requires that an electoral system under an electoral system under section 1572, in bracket there referring to either exclusively a party-based or comprising a combination of party lists and water representation, must, he emphasizes, result in general and proportional representation. And he says this is the clearest possible statement that dispels the notion that proportional representation is consonant only with representation through political parties. And further, counsel then advises that the Constitution recognizes that a mixed system of political parties, proportional and independent candidate representation can still satisfy, Chair, the requirement that an electoral system must generally result in proportional representation. And then on 9, Council then also advises that Parliament enacted a system, a mixed system at local government level, and I think there's a reference to Section 22 of the Local Government Municipal Structures Act. I'm not going to go into details with regards to that, except that it provides for the following in respect of election of councillors, in particular to both metropolitan and local municipalities. So there's a reference to what it provides for. But I want to move to 11, where it then says two ballots are then used to determine the seats. If you can scroll down there to 11, where it states that two ballots are then used to determine the seats allocated for ward councillors and proportional representation councillors, respectively. And from what the councillor's view is stated here, that from their own view, mirroring a similar system for elections of the National Assembly, including the use of two ballots, strikes a balance between permitting or allowing independent candidates to contest the election, but at the same time ensuring overall proportionality. And of course, while the Structures Act has never been challenged, they're of the view that it is constitutionally permissible. It provides a justification for the position that has been taken in the bill. But counsel also indicates that the fact of the matter is that independent candidates, by their nature, have the potential to skew proportionality in the system, as they can only ever obtain a single seat, no matter how large or small their proportional support is among the voters. It is therefore entirely appropriate for the system to take measures to ensure that proportionality can be achieved. Of course, they further state that political parties are the prime bodies through which proportionality is achieved in any electoral system. But further, counsel then further advises that our own constitution recognizes the role of political parties in our political and electoral system. And Section 1D provides that the Republic is founded on the value of, amongst others, a multi-party system of democratic government to ensure, and this is partly in response to some of the comments that have been received, including from the former chair of the MEC, Mr. Vali Musa, who indicates issues around accountability, responsiveness, and openness. And I think that's the same view that outside the others raise. So if you look at the Constitutional Court, they've emphasized that our system of democracy, political parties, in terms of our system of democracy, political parties occupy the center stage and play a pivotal role in facilitating the exercise of political rights. Now, if we were to look at number 16, it speaks to the exact proportion of how many seats should be used to achieve this overall proportionality. And now, this is in reference to the compensatory seats. And, of course, how many should be available to be contested by independent candidates and political parties. Now, this is reference to regional seats. And the advice from council is that this is something that Parliament must decide on. And of course, we do accept that an extreme skewing may be found to be rational If, for example, an independent candidate can only contest one or two seats out of 400, but reserving from the advice that we've received from council, reserving half the seats as compensatory seat is irrational. That's the advice on the first matter. We then move, Chair, to the second part, which is the issue around discarded votes, as some may call them, or wasted votes and proportional representation for independent candidates. There were concerns that were raised again from members of the public with regards to the fact that some votes may be forfeited by independent candidates who receive an excess of votes to be allocated a seat. And the advice that we've received from council is just a reiteration that virtually, in any electoral system, there's always the occurrence of what might be termed as wasted votes. If you were to look at any other system, whether you look at India, whether you look at the UK, whether you look at Canada, whether you look at any other system that is available. In fact, in the book on politics of electoral system, Michael Gallagher speaks about the fact that discarded votes in any electoral system is something that is inevitable. Now, there's an example that council has shown there in 18.1, and it states that if candidate X stands as an independent and received about 50,000 votes, and if you were to look at the threshold, if the threshold for election to a seat is only 40,000, naturally, there's no way that if you were to look at the excess, the 10,000 votes won't go anywhere, and therefore some might then regard them as wasted. Even in the current nature, if you were to look at the current POPR electoral system, if a political party receives 40,000 votes and the quota for a seat is 45,000 votes, then the party will obtain a seat at all. And those 40,000 votes will therefore be discarded. But further, if a party were to receive 85,000 votes, they'll only receive a single seat. And of course, the additional 40,000 votes will then be discarded. And if you were to look further, Chair, in the single member constituency or first past the post system, there are always wasted votes. This is a system, of course, that both UK and Canada uses. And this is because the election turns not on overall proportionality, but the extent to which a party or candidate wins the majority of votes within a single constituency. And of course, the overall balance in the legislature is not determined by the proportional number of votes received, but rather the number of constituencies that are won. And precisely it is because it's impossible to demarcate perfectly proportional constituency boundaries. A party may receive the majority of votes overall, but their candidates may not have won the majority of constituencies. And so many votes are wasted because a minority of voters would have chosen the majority of representatives in the legislature. So this system gives rise to gerrymandering and all sorts of other problems. And I think the point that council is making is that in any electoral system, wasted votes is a possibility. And previously, Chair, council has also advised that they may be wasted votes does not render the system impermissible or unconstitutional on its own. As I've stated previously, wasted or lost votes are a common feature of other election systems, including where the single member constituency system. Moreover, the council advised that the reality is that the votes cannot be truly said to be wasted or lost. And the advice is that if candidate X runs for the National Assembly as an independent, and of course it means once they are elected, they've achieved their objective and that of the voters that have elected them. The mere fact that she might have been elected with four votes, 40,000, does not change that. And of course, if candidate X consider that she'll get so many votes that they will cover two more seats, then she has the right to form her own political party to run for multiple seats rather than running for a single seat as an independent candidate. In addition to the question of wasted votes, as it's been asked by some members of the public, Some of them have bemoaned the fact that the system in the bill will not provide for proportional representation by independent candidates if they were to receive votes in excess of two quarters for a seat in the election concerned. Again, Chair, Council advises that this is a result inherent in any system which allows for independent candidates to run and requires overall proportionality. And the independent candidate is defined by the choice, if you recall, Chair, which the Concord has held is constitutionally protected to contest an election by not associating with others. And therefore, an independent candidate cannot expect to contest an election as an individual. Not if they make the choice not to associate with others, which is a constitutional choice that they make, and of course they are entitled to that choice, they can then have at the same time being able to contest as a group. And therefore, Council is advising that if independent candidate A is convinced that they are extremely popular and they believe that they will garner a lot of votes in excess of the quota, the solution for them is simple. They advise that they should register a political party, or referred to as a candidate A party, and run as a group where the party can put forward a second. So these are the options that they'll have, second, third, or fourth candidate, and so on for any other additional votes that they may require. So the suggestion of permitting, which is another issue that was raised, of permitting the transferring of votes by independent candidates to one another, according to Council, in their view, it's not required by the Constitution. In fact, they go further to say they are in actual serious concern about a system which allows an individual candidate to pass excess votes to other candidates or parties. And they further indicate that there's no way to know whether those that voted for that candidate will want their vote to go to such other candidate or party. It will also potentially concentrate an enormous amount of power in one individual, which will undermine the founding principle of a multi-party system and, of course, the value of proportionality. Then the third area that we will deal with, Chair, looks at the long-term and broader electoral reform. And these are some of the issues that are raised from some of the public comments that we've received. In some of these public comments, there's criticism that is leveled against the bill for not undertaking major electoral reform. And of course, the reasons why the bill addresses the inclusion of independent candidates into the current electoral system and does not change the system as a whole are numerous. The first one, of course, in response to Mary Mavanyisi from Watch 22 in Polokwane, the Eastern Cape Civil Society, representing seven organizations, and Zolani Nonyani. Firstly, these individuals and organizations have stated that the time allocated, Chairperson, for the amendment of the Electoral Act is extremely short. And from their own view, they indicate that the period should be extended to at least 2020 for consultation to be effective and meaningful. Now, if you were to look at the first issue that Council has raised, is that the relatively short period of time in which the amending act needs to be passed, both in light of the deadline imposed by the Concord or prescribed by the Concord, and the fact that the next election must be held in 2024 as prescribed, meant that it would not have been possible, Chairperson, to amend the entire system, for example, to include the creation of new constituencies for the election to run. So that's the first area. The second one is that the current parliament has no representation from independent candidates, as the system did not permit them to contest elections for the national and provincial legislature. And Council is of the view that the new system proposed in the bill should be adopted for the 2024 elections, having cited the two reasons above, and of course, for sure, the IEC will expatiate on some of these issues, and that the bill should specify the creation of a body of experts. This is a proposal in terms of how to take forward the issue that's been referred to as long-term and broader electoral reform. The proposal from Council is that a body of experts comprising broadly representative of society, to undertake a more thorough and long-term investigation into the electoral system and therefore propose more long-term and larger reforms to the system, should they be appropriate. And I suppose this will then give Parliament, of course, the Department of Home Affairs and the Electoral Commission and society as a whole much more longer period of time to consider the issues raised by the independent candidates in the electoral system and how best to balance this with the constitutional requirements of proportional representation in the system. But further council advises that the 2024 elections will provide concrete evidence of any merits or demerits of the proposed system. And the elected parliament, which provides the long-term electoral reform, will be the result of a system which permits independent candidates to contest the election. So from our side, council is currently considering this in terms of how this can be achieved in the bill. But obviously, I suppose this is a decision that Parliament as a body representing the people will have to make going forward. I now move to the next one. The fourth one is really the allocation of seats in the National Assembly vis-a-vis the provincial legislatures. In some of the public comments, Chairperson, it was pointed out that the system for allocating seats in the National Assembly and provincial legislature now differs in that for the provincial legislature, no seats are reserved for political parties as compensatory seats. And Council indicates this. How this came about was that the current system allocates seats, if you recall, on a national to national basis and provincial to national basis for the National Assembly, but no similar process is used for the provincial legislature. This was, it seems, to enable a spread of National Assembly members from different 9 provinces, whereas no similar spread was deemed necessary within a provincial legislature. Of course, if we were to look at dividing from the advice that we've received from Council, they state that dividing the seats in the National Assembly to be allocated in accordance with regional seats and national lists submitted by political parties in this manner to enable the spread of representatives from the provinces. You'll recall that initially this was adopted in Schedule 2 of the Interim Constitution of the Republic. And of course, the allocation of seats in the provincial legislatures did not follow this approach in the Interim Constitution. Indeed, these all seats were allocated in the same manner. And then Council then provides a schedule of how this was then done, including the spread of those seats in terms of the Interim Constitution. So if you move to 30, Chair, the bill follows the minimalist approach in line with the recommendation of the Ministerial Advisory Committee report, which was to use the current system and include independent candidates. And of course, Council also advises or warns that mirroring this system of allocation of seats in the provincial legislatures may cause practical difficulties. And they've indicated that in certain instances, it might result in four ballots used in elections for elections for the National Assembly and provincial legislatures. So we then move to the next one. The next one then deals with vacancies. These comments were mainly looking at the provision which dealt with the filling of vacancies. Chair, in respect of seats allocated to parties, vacancies from the advice from my council is that will be filled by party list as it currently is. In the initial bill, if you recall, Chair, the initial bill proposed that vacancies in seats of independent candidates should be filled only at the next election. This is the initial proposal. And therefore, there was also a view that holding by-elections will not be workable or financially feasible across an entire region or province whenever a vacancy arises. Now, if you were to look at the current B bill, which this committee or the select committee is considering, it adopts a system that the votes from the previous election will be used to fill the vacancy as follows. Firstly, it says that the votes and seats allocated to independent candidates, causing the vacancy will be disregarded. Secondly, the votes and seats allocated to the independent candidate already in the office will be discarded. And then going forward, the result for the regional or provincial legislature will be recalculated respectively. And lastly, that the vacant seat will be awarded to an eligible independent candidate or party that contested the preceding election. From the view by council is that this addresses the concerns that were raised in the public participation process, in particular concerns that were raised with regards to Section 47(4) of the Constitution, which provides that vacancies in the National Assembly must be filled in terms of national legislation. It was said that this requires the vacated seats to be filled even before the next general election. Of course, while it is true, as council advises, that a seat allocated to an independent candidate that is vacated will be allocated to a political party and not another independent candidate. That is the system that best reflects the will of the voters. If, for example, the seat were to go to the next eligible independent candidate, that could, in theory, be a candidate who only received one or two votes instead of a party that received many thousands. That will evidently not fulfill requirements of proportionality, as the council advises. Of course, there's a downside to this approach, as council advises, and it says that those voters who choose a specific independent candidate on their one ballot and who won a seat would have their votes removed from the reallocation of the seat consent. There are two answers to this that council provides. The first one is that the nature of the system of independent candidates and the voter must vote knowing the limitations of the person they vote for. And the second one is that the voter, in any event, still had and presumably exercised their opportunity to vote for the compensatory seats on their ballot or on the other ballot, so their vote still impacts on the makeup of the National Assembly. Now, that's with regards to the issue around vacancies. So I'm going to deal now with almost the last two. The last one, or the second last, is the independent candidates contesting more than one region. If we were to look at the current bill, Chairperson, the bill permits independent candidates to participate in more than one region for election in the National Assembly. And if you were to look at the original bill, this was not permitted in the original bill, or the original bill did not cater for this. And council has previously advised that such a system will be constitutionally compliant if we then allow independent candidates to participate in more than one region. And the advice that they've previously provided states that the bill provides that, and I quote, if an independent candidate stands to be allocated a seat in more than one region, he or she is only allocated a seat in the region where he or she received the most number of votes and shall forfeit any additional seats. And council fully supports the inclusion of the rule which governs the seat that will be allocated to an independent candidate. In the event that they receive a seat in more than one region, it will be patently inappropriate to leave that to the individual discretion of the candidate. And from the advice that we've received from council, they state that in their view, consideration should, however, be given to stating that the candidate will be awarded the seat in the region where he or she received the highest proportion of votes rather than the greatest number of votes per se. And they indicate that, one, it is because in some regions, a candidate may receive a large number of votes, but proportionally receive less support. And this might happen in regions with larger populations like Gauteng or KwaZulu-Natal. And of course, in smaller populations, in provinces such as the Northern Cape, the candidate may receive fewer votes numerically, but a larger proportion of support from the electorate. in the view of council, a rule that awards the seat with a greater proportion of votes better gives effect to the voice of the voters. Of course, there's a downside to this as well. And the downside to allowing independent candidates to contest more than one region is that they're likely to be more wasted votes. Secondly, a candidate may obtain enough votes for a seat in both Region A and B, and they can only get a single seat, however. So the voters in the region where the candidate does not take up a seat will lose out. Of course, there is of course no way to avoid this problem that was stated. One could not, for example, permit votes to be aggregated across regions. So this is one of the comments that's made in the submissions made to the select committee. And this is because different regions will be allocated a different number of seats. And this will depend on the size of the population in each region. More seats will be available in regions with larger populations, and aggregating votes across regions will completely append that principle. And as the council sees it, the wasted vote problem is one that is inherent in any system that allows independent candidates to contest elections. But from the advice that we have received, they've then said this is a matter that the parliament will have to make a call on, and I think that's our submission as well. Then the last matter then deals with the signature requirement. And council starts by providing the following. One is that if we were to look at Section 31B, 3A of the bill, B bill, which is the one that's before us, the following must be attached to the nomination form when it's submitted: a complete prescribed form confirming that the independent candidate has submitted in the prescribed manner, and amongst others, the names, identity numbers, and signature of voters whose names appear on the segment of the voters' roll for that region or province in which the independent candidate is standing for election, and of course, who support his or her candidature, totaling at least 20% of the quota for a seat that was required for a seat in the previous comparable election. Now, some of the comments in the submission by council will be responding to what Atkins commented about. And in principle, council is repeating what they previously stated, and they said that they repeat that they're of the view that using a formula to determine the voter support eligibility requirement will be a rational approach. The previous quota for a seat in the National Assembly, if you recall, Chairperson, was approximately 44,000. And of course, assuming that a similar quota will occur in future, it will require an independent candidate to demonstrate the support of at least 8,800 voters in order to contest an election. And further, council advises that it will be more difficult for an independent candidate to satisfy the eligibility requirement for each and every election than it would be for a political party to register with the commission for any election. And council also advises that if you were to look at Section 15(3A) of the Electoral Commission Act, it provides that a political party's application for registration for purposes of contesting all elections shall be accompanied by that party's deed of foundation, which has been adopted at a meeting and has been signed by the prescribed number of persons who are qualified voters. Further, the commission is empowered to prescribe the number concerned. And of course, the relevant regulation currently provides that the deed of foundation referred to in Section 11 of the Act must be signed. If we were to look at the next page, it's 1,000 registered voters for an application in respect of the entire republic, and then of course 500 registered voters for application in respect of a particular province, 300 registered voters for application in respect of a particular district or municipality. Accordingly, political parties require at least almost 1,000 voters to register to contest an election. And of course, council is of the view that it's obvious that a political party will have a greater ability to motivate voters to to assist it to register to contest elections than independent candidate would. And they are of the view that requiring an independent candidate to obtain 8 times the number of votes to contest one election than a political party does to contest all elections strikes us as arbitrary and unfair. That's the advice from them. And therefore, if we were to look at the proposal by the Electoral Commission, the Electoral Commission has proposed a way to address these issues, and we believe that this should be incorporated into the bill. If you look at that proposal first, to introduce the requirement that a registered political, registered party, not presently registered in a legislative body, must provide form demonstrating that the party has the support of voters in each region or province in which the party has nominated candidates totaling at least 20% of the quota for a seat in the previous comparable election, thus mirroring the requirement for independent candidates. And the second point that's made is that to add a provision to the signature requirement for independent candidates that a candidate who was elected to the National Assembly or provincial legislature as an independent candidate in the preceding election is be exempted from the requirement. So obviously, these changes, Chair, in conclusion, will treat, from the view of council, political parties and independent candidates on a more equal footing and should, in our view, be adopted. That's the advice that we've received from council. I think that concludes the submission, Minister. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, DG. Minister, do you want to add as well?
Chair, thank you, Chair. No, I think the DG has clarified most of the points, which were sore points. But from where I'm sitting, there are two very important ones, which I think the NCOP must take very seriously and consider very seriously. Not to mean the others are less important, but these ones, I think the two I'm going to mention are the key to the complaints that we hear about that this bill is unfair and unconstitutional. So the first one, I'll start from the last one, I'll make it first, is the last one that the DG has dealt with, this issue of signature requirement. I want to explain it very fully, and not to say the senior council has not done a good job, they have, but because members here might not be well acquainted with what is being said here, I want to explain exactly the background, where this comes from, and why are we here where we are. What the council is saying is that in 1996, when the Electoral Commissions Act was enacted, the Electoral Commissions Act is an act that founded the IEC. That means it's an act that brought the IEC into existence. In that act, in the regulations of that act rather, they are mentioning this issue of 1,000 signatures. What the council here called the deed of foundation, that a political party in its deed of foundation, that means in its founding document, must show that it has got support in the population, so that we don't go around registering one man political parties, two men political parties, or even 10 men, or even 100 men political parties, men here representing both male and female. So they said for that reason, they put these figures which you see on section 45, 3, Roman figure 1, 2, and 3 of what the senior council has presented, that if the person, that political party want to have a footprint nationally, then in their detailed foundation, they must bring 1,000 signatures. If, on the other hand, they believe they are going to confine themselves to a province or a region, then they must bring 500. And if they are going to confine themselves to a metro or a district municipality or a metro, which means in all the elections they will be confined there because their DITO foundation is saying so, then they must be bring 300 signatures. That is what happened from 1996. Now, obviously, and for very obvious reasons, nothing could be said of independence because there were no independents in the national and provincial legislatures. Independents were only found in local government. So this was, nothing was said about independence. And we've been running like that from 1996. Now you fast forward 2022. We've been compelled by the court to include independence in both the province and national. Now suddenly an issue arises. If a founding document, I mean founding provisions, a deed of foundation rather, for a political party is a certain number of signatures, what about an independent? Now independent do not have any deed of foundation. They are not required to register. No human being is required to register as an independent. Even in local government from 1996, we have not been doing so. They are not required to register. But what they are required to do is, you can't just wake up and find all independents on the ballot. There must be a qualifying criteria. In other words, there must be some numbers that are produced by independents to show really that they've got some bit of support. So in the act, Parliament was compelled to put something like that, that because independents don't register, but to appear on the ballot box, I mean ballot paper, as to avoid a million names on the ballot paper all contesting, there must be a qualifying criteria. And that criteria is in terms of money deposited, but also in terms of signatures. Now, there doesn't seem to be a lot of argument or criticism or discussion about the money. The issue here are signatures. People are then going back to compare with 1996, because in this bill, the amendment bill, Parliament then said for an independent to appear on the ballot, the signatures must be equal to 50% of the votes. 50% of the votes that were required to win a seat in the previous election. That's what Parliament decided. After a long time, they said 50% is too high. It was taken down to 30% and eventually down to 20%. That means for an independent to appear on the ballot, they must acquire a number of signatures that are equivalent to the number of votes that were needed to win one seat in the previous elections. Now, this 20% is confusing people. Some take it as 20,000 votes, when actually it's 20%. Now, regarding what happened in the previous elections, 20% is equivalent to about 8,000 votes. Not 20,000, as people are claiming. 20% an average seat, 20% of an average seat in the previous elections. Obviously, that's the election that took place in 2019, is 8,000 votes, which means all independents will have to acquire 8,000 signatures in order to appear on the ballot. Now, people are comparing this with the 1996 for a deed of foundation for a political party, which is a maximum of 1,000. And they are saying this is unequal. We, of course, do agree that this is unequal. And we think the NCOP must cure this inequality. That's why then there is this proposal that in the bill, we must now insert something that doesn't exist from the National Assembly. The NCOP must now insert that we now even go for new political parties, that any political party that is new, which wants to appear on the ballot must also present the same number of signatures as independent, as is required from independents. That's number one, which must be in the bill. And number two, it must say for both the independent and the new political party, once they produce these signatures and win a seat in the national assembly or provincial legislature, in the subsequent election, these signatures are not needed because they've already proven themselves that they do have support. This is to make sure that we equalize them with the present political party. Because even in the bill from the National Assembly, this signature requirement is not required from the political parties that are already in parliament for the reason that we believe they've got nothing to prove. They've already proved their worth. They've already proved their support. The fact that they are having a seat, even if it's one, shows that there is a certain number of South Africans who appreciate them and support them. And for that reason, no, nothing is required from them. So what we are asking you to do is to insert in the bill from the National Assembly, number one, that the number of signatures required for a new political party and that is required for a new an independent to appear on the ballot, for both to appear on the ballot, the signatures must be the same. That's number one you must add. And number two in that regard, that once they win a seat in the subsequent elections, they will no longer require any signatures from them. So that's basically the most important thing we're asking you to put in this bill as opposed to what the National Assembly has done. The second one is this grammar for constituencies. This grammar for constituencies, which has pervaded the whole debate and actually destroyed the essence of the debate, that people say they want constituencies. If we dot constituencies, then we are running away from responsibility. Now, there is a belief, Chairperson, out there, that political parties presently participating in parliament, that affects me and you, political parties in parliament want to be gatekeepers. They don't want to be voted out, and that's why they are uniting in keeping out independence in terms of constituencies. Because people who believe this story believe that while there are constituencies which are contested by independents, all political parties presently in parliament will be wiped out completely. Whether that is true or not, I'm not here to debate that. But the fact is that people are demanding constituencies. They believe constituencies will be a game changer to the present system which we are having, which is broadly represented by political parties. Now, Chairperson, we were not in principle fighting against the issue of constituencies. We never took a decision that there shall never be constituencies. We never did so. We just did not answer that because in this particular Constitutional Court ruling, that is not being provided for, it's not an issue. In fact, Justice Madanga, on paragraph 15 of judgment, I want you to go and read it, is also here, clearly said that issue is a purview of parliament. It's not part of the judgment that this type of electoral system is better, is better than the other, and this one is good, and constituencies are very good, and all that. They said they are not venturing into that and that they are leaving to parliament. Now, parliament being faced with this had to make a decision. Do we go into constituencies? We preferred not to answer that question, Chair, for the simple reason that there was no time. And I'll tell you why. If you look at option two of the Ministerial Advisory Committee, where they were saying we must choose between two options, option two was saying we must divide the country into 200 constituencies where independents and political parties will contest, and the other 200 seats will continue in the way they are doing. That means in the way of compensatory seats which come directly from political parties. That is the option. Now, if we were to take that option of dividing the country into 200 constituencies. What it will mean was that Parliament was supposed to pause, start enacting a new legislation. A new legislation that will provide for a demarcation board. Because, Chairperson, I want you to understand me. The present board that demarcates municipalities, districts, and wards is a municipal demarcation board act. It's according to a municipal demarcation board act. It actually, the name actually so is municipal. It's not for national election. And the 200 constituencies that are mentioned in the Ministerial Advisory Committee, they do not exist. There are no 200 geographic areas in South Africa which you can point and say we can use these areas. It means a completely new demarcation altogether, which means then you must have an act that allows you. Some people were saying we need to amend the Municipal Demarcation Act in order to make it national. That will leave to lawyers whether that is legal or not. But even if that was to happen, that will need a lot of time, Chairperson. Even if we were to take the Municipal Demarcation Board Act and say we are transferring it or we're amending it into making national demarcation so that they've got the power to demarcate the country into 200 constituencies. Chairperson, there is no way under the sun that will happen within a period of 24 months. That's why people are even saying, even for the present bill, there is not enough time. So we realize that that is not the way to go. Some people in civil society believe we must go that way. We'll simply apply to the Constitutional Court to move the 2024 elections further away. And we believe the Constitutional Court will never agree to move elections. They've never agreed with local government, even for COVID. They said even COVID is not a good enough reason to move away elections from what the Constitution is prescribing. Remember, as to when the elections must take place, is prescribed in the Constitution. It cannot be changed by us willy-nilly or even by the IEC. You have got to go to the Constitutional Court, and they've already rejected that. Meaning what? There is no chance that they will ever agree to move to 2024 elections. They must take place. And if they must take place, Chairperson, there is no mechanism with which we can immediately put up a new act or amend the Municipal Demarcation Board Act and then put up a demarcation board and then from there to start dividing the country into constituencies. And I want people to be honest here, Chair. I want them to be honest, both politically and practically. We know what happens, even in Municipal Demarcation Board, that communities become restive. They don't just accept that, meaning they need a lot of time for consultation with community meetings. We all know what happened in Vuani. Just when they were demarcating one part of the country into a municipality, we're not talking about the whole country or the 200 areas which is being proposed here. We're just talking about demarcating one area in Limpopo into a municipality in an area called Vuani. 15 schools were burned down and all that, all hell broke loose. And so all I'm saying is not the reason why there mustn't be constituencies, but it's the reason why we need a lot of time in order to convince communities for them not to burn the country, in order for them to accept what is coming for them, and they must understand it. We also know that there are political parties that formed in terms of demarcation of provinces. There is a political party in parliament that has been formed about the issue of Matatiele. Matatiele has been in Eastern Cape for a long time, but still there is still war that it must be remarcated into KZN. We also know the story of Mwute in Limpopo and Bushbuckridge in Mpumalanga. So what am I trying to tell you? That if we go that way, as is the clamor of civil society, that we must divide into constituencies, we must know that we need time. Now, in this bill, we realize that we didn't have time and we steered away from that. Unfortunately, That is a serious point of contention. So what must the NCOP do? The NCOP must find a process, as is being advised by senior counsel here, a process of satisfying the country that we have not made any ruling against constituencies. We are just saying there's no time for this present bill in time for 2024 elections, and satisfy them that after 2024, Parliament or South Africans still have got the right and power to start that debate on whether the country must get into constituencies or not. That is why the senior counsel here is proposing that perhaps the NCOP must rule that a special committee of experts be approached and appointed in one or way or the other to decide whether the constituency system is good for the country, and if it is, in what manner must it be done. Senior counsel here believes that Parliament is not the right structure to do so, because we are incumbents. We have already have positions on this issue and will be blindsided by how it will affect our political party. But an independent structure might sit and say, look, you South Africans, if you go to this issue of constituencies, this is what will happen. Remember, Chair, this issue was debated in CODESA. It's not something that's new. It was debated, and South Africa chose the present system. If we must change it, it will need another thorough debate, and there was just no chance here. But to satisfy those who believe political parties want to lock out constituencies because they want to save themselves, the NCOP must show them that that is not the case by putting something in the act to the extent that this matter will be looked into after 2024, whichever way you put it, but just to satisfy them that we have not discarded it, we simply did not have time for that. Those are the two issues, Chairperson. The others about the discarding of votes, allocations of seats and all that, I'm sure they are simple enough for the NCOP to be able to answer. I just thought I needed to guide you on these two main ones, which seems to be the pillars of the opposition to this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister and the DG for that presentation. I think the broad themes broadly covers the public comments that the committee received, and the presentation the DG also made reference to individual comments. And I think that document, DG, must also be provided to the committee for our record. Let me also thank the minister for highlighting those two points and also providing context to the two important points. I think the next presentation we're going to take is that of the IEC. But before we do that, I just want to remind honourable members to note down their comments and or questions that they would want to raise once we are done with all the presentations. The second thing is honourable members that are currently at the venue where we are in KZN, if you're still struggling with network, I'm suggesting that you actually join us in the boardroom. We don't seem to be having a network problem in the boardroom. That being said, let me then hand over to the IEC, Chairperson of the Commission. Over to you.
Good morning, Chairperson of the Committee and members of the committee. I will have my camera on for a short while. I'm in a difficult position at the moment. I have taken time to take this meeting, but I'm not in the office.
One moment, Commissioner. I just didn't indicate that the boardroom I'm in, I'm also with Honorable Member Stengo and Honorable Member Mutsumai. And they're actually reminding me that I said I'll give them a 5-minute break to reflect on matters that were presented before we take the next presentation. Perhaps will that 5 minutes also assist you, Chairperson of the Commission?
That's okay, Chairperson.
Okay. All right. Okay. Can we just perhaps please do not log off the platform. It's 10:10. At 10:15, we'll continue. But if I can give members just 5 minutes for them to get their thoughts together and for their own reflection before we go into the next presentation. Thank you very much. Let me just tell.
Kenny, what is the
Honourable Tiffa, you've raised your hand, but I think we're on a 2 minute break. Can I take you when you come? Okay, Honourable Members, I propose that we continue. Over to you once again, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chairperson of the committee. I greet you and the members of your committee, the minister, the deputy minister, the DG, and everyone present on the platform. I have with me members of the commission. We've had to deal with a few schedule issues, and we have divided ourselves so that we can fulfill this role and other roles. With me is the CEO and his team, and we will deal with the questions that have been referred to us. I'm grateful that the policy issues and questions have been dealt with through the minister and the DG. Ours now is to deal with those technical questions around this bill that have been raised. We have done so hopefully with a view that these questions are clarified in simplistic terms. In the manner that these questions have been raised, they have been very technical. And so our CEO will now deal with those questions, the technical part of those questions, in applying that which the minister and the DG have clarified in terms of the policy choices. I thank you very much, Chairperson, and I hand over to the CEO and his team. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. CEO Mamabolo.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson of the committee. We're going to navigate we're going to be talking to the responses of the Commission to some of the issues that have been raised in the public submissions. And as the Chairperson indicated, a substantial proportion of issues raised are of a technical nature, which unavoidably have required a technical response. There are annexures that go with this submission. I nonetheless don't propose to deal with the annexures because they involve mathematical calculations. But I think those are submitted for the record. And should there be need on another occasion for the committee to go through those annexures, the IC will stand ready to participate. We will deal really with the logic that arises from the analysis that is in the models that are created. But before we commence, we just want to reiterate that our understanding was that the Concord ordered Parliament to ensure that independents participate within the current constitutional scheme, which results in general proportional representation. And that the court did not order any specific electoral system. They indicated, or rather ordered, that whatever system that Parliament may come up with must subscribe to the in general proportional representation standard. Having said so, the proportional representation systems are subject to distortions with the introduction of elements such as the participation of independents. And that is an inevitable practical consequence of the introduction of independent candidates. And our analysis is that the only way to include independents in our current two-tier compensatory system is to allow them to obtain seats and regard that as a separate component, and then apply proportionality in respect of the remaining seats to political parties. What this will do will grant representation to independents as ordered by court, and then maintain intra-party proportionality demanded of us by the Constitution. So the in general element permits a legal threshold that allows the allocation of only 5 seats not initially allocated based on the largest remainders. In other words, the current system or the proposed system allows for 5 seats to be allocated in the second round of allocation. And from the sixth seat onwards, you use the highest average number of votes per seat. And this is to prevent absurd situations where a party gains a seat with little support. So this principle is embedded in the current draft, and it is articulated in this manner precisely to preserve the proportional quality of Schedule 1A. So all said and done, the Commission is of the view that the bill meets the requirements of election results yielding in general proportional representation. And we have sent through to Zolani, the committee secretary, Mr. Gento, the models that we've done to support the submission that we make in this morning. Now, when we look at the current system, in other words, the system still in operation, and in particular, when we look at the 2019 election, it will be noted that the only party that is accurately represented at the level of proportionality is the majority party, and that all other parties are slightly overrepresented. And this comes about due to the inclusion of the 309,000 wasted votes cast for 34 parties that did not gain representation. So even in a PR context, there is that phenomenon of the wastage of votes. There is votes cast for parties which don't ultimately gain seats in the legislative assembly. And what that does is to create a little sense of over-representation. And in all cases, the minor, although the variance is quite minor at less than 0.25, that being the threshold to gain at least one seat. Now, we depict that in Annexure 1, which is available to yourselves. In Annexure 2, we depict the percentage support each represented party received in the 2019 election if the 309 votes of the unrepresented parties are discarded. The consequence of that is that the two largest parties are underrepresented and the rest are slightly overrepresented. But the point really that we want to indicate is that the discarding of some votes does not apply to the present system. And we're presenting this to illustrate that the discarding of votes influences outcomes. And this is a very important issue, that in any model that you construct, as soon as it involves the discarding of votes, whether it's a forfeiture calculation, whether it's a vacancy calculation, or any recalculation of any sort that involves the discarding of a proportion of votes, that has a bearing on outcomes. Now, with the models that you'll see that are embedded in the annexure, all votes are taken into account to determine the outcomes in the regions. And again, a very important point, because part of the discourse in the public is that votes for independence are not being considered, they're treated differently. It is not so. All votes that are cast in the regions are taken into account in the determination of the outcomes of the regional election. But with the determination of the compensatory, or what we call national to national element, the votes of the independents are excluded, precisely because you want to compensate and restore overall proportionality in an endeavor to realize the constitutional standard of proportional representation in general. But this exclusion leads to a lower quota than would have otherwise applied, and to allocating a larger number of provisional seats during the first round of allocations. Naturally, when you exclude the votes for independence in the determination of your compensatory element, like we say here, the quota is reduced, and you allocate more because the quota is lower. You allocate more on the first round of allocation. The reason why votes for independents are discouraged while those for unsuccessful parties are not is because for such successful candidate seats are already finally allocated, and an independent can gain more seats, can gain more additional seats. If you've already gained a seat, you've gained a seat, you are represented, and that is allocated to you. So really, I think what we need really to go with here, a takeaway, is that the exclusion or the discarding of votes in any circumstance, in any model, leads to certain outcomes. And one of those is that the quota is lower, it lowers the quota. And secondly, it allows for a greater allocation on the first round, precisely because of that lower quota. And then in section three, we have models that we've created, the annexures 3 and 4, and they simulate two scenarios. One where three independents gain seats, and the other one where six independents gain seats. The results of the 2019 national and provincial elections are used, relating to 3 and 4 parties respectively, to construct the models. We make these parties to appear as though they are their independents, and these are parties that gain representation in the regions, where obviously the independents will be participating. But because in 2019 we did not have the two ballots, we, to accommodate that, we accepted that a similar number of votes were cast regionally and nationally for all the contestants. Obviously this is an anomaly, but it doesn't affect the validity of the illustration. The totals for party and total votes differ in the two models, depending on the number of votes for independents discarded in the list compensatory calculations. Because the current Schedule 1A does provide for the exclusion of independent votes in the calculation of the compensatory ballot. This is just an illustration. It's not an actual situation. Now, in Annexure 3, in that model, you'll see that where three independents gain seats, they gain those three seats on the largest remainder method. And this is there are relatively minor variations with the current system. Now, the result of that calculation, of that model, is that the largest party is still slightly underrepresented on each share of vote for parties. Again, the calculation of the 57.5 of the vote it gained in the 2019 election included the 309 votes for parties that did not gain a seat. If that were to be disregarded for comparative purposes, only the proportion of votes for successful parties included, it gained 58.5% of the party vote in 2019. Now, again, here's an important thing. The difference between the intra-party and overall support represents at least 3 seats in the 400 National Assembly. And that perhaps allows for a proper comparison. Now, when we did say that the introduction of independence does create distortions to proportionality, but when you exclude the votes for the independents in the calculation of the compensatory element, the intra-party proportion remains very close. There's a close relationship between the seats that parties gain and their share of votes, having excluded the votes of political parties. In other words, when you exclude the votes of independents, the party has a different percentage of the total share of votes, and similarly, that translates into a different share of seats. But there's a direct relationship, a proportional relationship between the share of votes, the new share of votes, and the new share of seats. This is an important point. In Model 4, Annexure 4, 6 independent gains it, once again on the largest remainder. The variation becomes even bigger. The largest party gains 7 seats compared to the current system, and compared to the current system and position with other consequential adjustments. But the largest party remains underrepresented based on its share of the party vote, having excluded the votes of those 6 independents who have gained seats. It is important to understand why some parties in a model gain seats compared to 2019 outcomes, which is one of the submissions certainly has honed in on this matter. It is a mathematical inevitability, given the necessity to deal with independents and their votes in a compartmentalized manner. The quota used to determine the overall composition of the National Assembly was 43,485, whilst in the model, it is 43,144. the reduction is due to discarding the votes for independent candidates, which includes for unsuccessful independent candidates. So the effect of discarding of votes of independents in the calculation of the overall compensation results in a lower quota, as you can see, from 43485 to 43144. Now, the lower quota in turn leads to some parties gaining more seats in the first round of allocation compared with the situation in 2019, and the rest follows in consequence based on that mathematical logic. Now, whatever model one constructs, intra-party proportionality will always be attained on Schedule 1A. And that means the relationship between votes, percentage of votes per party and percentage of seats per party. That's what we mean by intra-party proportionality. There will be slight variations, but not any significant. So even with the distortions that independents introduce, when it comes to the overall party proportions, there will be a clear measure of proportionality between their percentage of votes and their percentage of seats. But we need not make a mistake of looking at the original percentage of seats, because when you exclude the votes for independents, there's a new percentage of votes for parties. We've got to compare their seat share against their votes, their new vote share, having excluded the independent, the votes for the independent candidates. I think that's a fundamental issue that appear to be that appears to be missed in the discourse. Now, let's look at the single member constituencies just for comparative purposes. I think the commission position has always been clear, and that is, it is not for an election management body such as the commission to determine national policy and consequently, it is not for the commission to determine an electoral system for the country. That is a matter that is constitutionally vested in parliament. But we did indicate that we are available to support and optimize whatever system is chosen to ensure that it is functionally implementable. But we also looked at this notion of single member constituencies and created models to see if this, what the implication of a single member constituencies. And we looked at this alive to the fact that it is not possible between now and the 2024 election to have single member constituencies. And I think the DG and the minister traversed that that issue a bit, but we do confirm from the commission's point of view that if we are to deliver an organized election, single member constituencies would not be possible, just from a practical point of view, not from a principled opposition. So it is important to consider whether alternative models would result in what could be regarded as a more proportional outcome. To this end, we do refer to Annex 5. They deal with the notion of the 200 seats in Annex should be filled in a single member constituency as proposed as an option in the ministerial advice to committee. Now, once you talk single member constituencies, inherently you're talking first past the post element, where the winning candidate does not require an absolute majority, rather only more votes than the other candidate. And for this purpose, we've used the 2021 municipal election, which is also a two-tier compensatory system. The number and percentage of votes a party won are a close approximation as could be made to arrive at the likely constituency a party could win. So these are approximations, as you know, we grouped the votes together. What reflect geographical areas of support that are primarily due to past and present spatial anomalies and areas of concentrated support. And this phenomenon of areas of concentration and concentrated support will likely also be reflected in constituency elections. The outcomes in this model can naturally not be directly compared with those of other annexures used where we use the 2019 data set. The votes for independence have been grouped in Annex 5, even though their votes would be spread and the number of votes required to win a single constituency would be much higher than the number they needed to win the 52 as they did based on the first past the post method in municipal election. And we do this precisely to illustrate the maximum theoretical impact of independent candidates could have based on this data set. Votes for other participating parties have also been grouped, and they together have less than 2.5% of the votes. Now, the results arrived at in the model Mark 5 could be seen as more proportional than those achieved with the results in Annex 3. The represented parties, however, are slightly, but not widely, overrepresented. But when you compare that with Annex 6, the situation changes radically. The same assumptions are used. Here, however, the votes for a party with broad support, but with this support not being geographically represented, are now marked as the participation of independents. The discarding of this large number of votes when the compensatory element has to be cut leads to a much lower quota and outcome. Although mathematically sound, that will not be acceptable since a minority of votes leads to a majority of seats. Now, in a single member constituency, other than the issues of the wastage of votes, which the DG traversed, there is also the theoretical possibility of gaining a majority of seats on a minority of votes. So such as we had at some point in Lesotho. where the party with the majority of seats in the House actually had a lower, it's not the majority of votes. So it's an issue that we were trying to illustrate here. So given that a single member constituency system is thus potentially at least as vulnerable to problems of proportionality as any other system. So we just really wanted to put that matter on the table for consideration as the committee considers this bill. Now, Annex 7 is the model where votes on the first ballot determine the outcomes of the region, and the second ballot determines the outcome of the party compensatory ballot to restore overall proportionality. For this model, the identical data set is used as used in model 4. In this model, regional votes are not considered when the compensatory list allocations are determined. Overall proportionality for 400 seats minus those seats that are gained by independent candidates in the regional elections must be filled. The regional seats are those attained in the 29 elections. So this is based on the 29 elections. The outcome of this model is not different from that resulting from implementation of the provisions of the Electoral Amendment Bill. Given the 2019 elections, at least the largest party gains in both instances the same number of seats. Also, the largest parties are still underrepresented compared to their share of the party votes on the new total valid votes, having excluded votes one, or rather votes for independent candidates. So that intra-party proportionality is maintained. To an extent, the party votes in the regional component that, in terms of the bill, must be combined with the compensatory vote to determine the overall party support may, with the assumptions in the Model 4, have been overstated in favor of the largest parties. Had actual data been available, the larger parties would have gained even fewer seats in the model in Annex 4 than in model on Annex 7. Now, the model that we have does not correspond with the expectations of this approach as expressed in the public domain, meaning it does not necessarily have an inherent advantage for larger parties, or is disproportionately gain, or rather that larger parties have a disproportionate gain of seats. That model does not say that. Now, the provincial elections, we also have a model that looks at the provincial elections in Gauteng based on the 2019 provincial elections. And we attributed some votes to independents. And the calculation yielded the same the same outcome. The number of parties represented in the legislature is far less than the case in the, of the National Assembly. It varies between 4 and 7. And in fact, with 5 legislatures heavily, only having 4 parties. Thus far, smaller parties seem to have played a lesser role in provincial elections, despite quotas mostly being lower or even substantially lower than at the national level. It is only in Gauteng and the Western Cape that substantial quotas have arisen in the past. Now, the scenarios that are before you that were submitted through the public consultation process about provincial elections are obviously based on hypothetical data and I assume great support for independent candidates. Now, those things may well materialize and we don't take issue with their mathematical possibility, certainly not. Because we say the conclusions they reached in those scenarios are correct. At the same time, they contain assumptions for an independent candidate winning more than one region and provincial seats with significant consequential effects on the perceptions of proportionality. Now, whether these scenarios are likely to occur is not the point that we argue in. These extremes can only be avoided if an independent is limited to spending only in one region. Now, that's a policy choice that has been made. And what the commission is about really is optimizing the policy choices made. And we also accept that the two ballot system with sub-regions will not be an answer either in the provincial election because it will yield the same outcomes as articulated in section 5 above. Now, Mr. Atkins made a substantial submission to the Select Committee, and we wish to offer some comments on some of the issues that Mr. Atkins raised. The submission correctly says that the bill is based on entirely illogical idea of individuals, that is, independent candidates being on the same ballot as parties, and that every problem with the bill arises as a consequence of the fundamental problem. Of course, these are correct. We have to include independent candidates in a system that has its general quality proportional representation that is demanded by the Constitution. And the concept is clear that you've got to construct a system that includes independence but subscribes to the proportional representation or rather a proportional outcome in general terms. And given the models that we are we've submitted, the reality of the inclusion of independence in proportional system induces distortions to proportions. That stands to reason that by introducing independence in proportional system, that inherently induces distortions to proportions. Now, the submission proceeds from the premise that for the bill to be fair and constitutional compliant, it should result broadly in the same outcome as in 2019. If the same data set is used for calculation purposes. This is logically and mathematically not possible. And the reason is simple. if independents are finally awarded the seats they win in the regions, and you exclude both those seats and the votes for independents from federal calculus, then inevitably the quota will be lower than it was in 2019 based on all votes cast. There's a new, once you exclude the votes of independents, there's a new percentage of votes share, and there's a new percentage of seats share. Precisely because you've now removed the votes of independents. Naturally, you're working on a lower quota, and there's going to be a different percentage of votes share as against seats share. Because different quotas cannot give you the same results. And the reality is that lower quotas benefit contestants with greater support. Lower quotas will benefit contestants with greater support. And our view is that it must be so. We must reward greater support. That's what an election is about. It's about who has the better numerical strength. And this is not necessarily disproportionate, because the new percentage share of votes has a proportional relationship with the percentage of seats. And this is not because parties are given an advantage, but this is because of the practical consequences of introducing independence. The submission proposes that the following solution to restore so-called acceptable level of proportionality. And it says we should say the proportional representation seats less than the number won by independents in the region should be carried out solely on the basis of the proportional representation ballot, with the regional ballot excluded. The proposition for creating such a model is logical and correct. It is only the outcome that is not correctly projected. The reason is explained above. We have demonstrated that you get to the same outcome. It is clear from the contents of the previous point that using two ballots cannot mitigate the distortions to proportionality that the participation of independents bring along. But the use of two ballots deal with the issue of voters supporting an independent and having a second choice to support the party if they so choose. And every ballot cast influences the respective tier of the electoral system it relates to. Every ballot cast in the region will influence the regional election. And every ballot cast on the national compensatory ballot will influence the compensatory election, including party support in the regions, if there was. An individual cannot be elected more than once in the same legislature. Thus, discarding excess votes for successful independents is a logical consequence. If you are an individual, you win, and there are excess votes, once you reach the threshold, you are in. And the seat that you have is protected. And it does follow, therefore, that any excess votes you have to be discarded. That parties do not that parties do not have single but multiple candidates, and the excess votes can therefore be pulled for other candidates, is an equally logical consequence. It is a choice to stand as an individual or to represent a party. The submission is correct insofar as with more votes will mostly gain more seats with the first provisional allocation of seats than in the current system. It should, however, also be kept in mind that in both the models 3 and 4, some smaller parties also benefit, albeit not to the same extent. In none of the models, except in a system of single member, does the largest party gain more seats than its share of the party vote. This, again, it's an important thing that really is in the discourse, that the formula is so constructed to ensure that the largest party gains more seats than its share of the vote. Our view is that intra-party proportion in the models that we presented is maintained. The submission is also correct that the outcomes in provincial elections could be largely distorted in the event of multiple simultaneous successes by an independent in more than one region and provincial election. The proposal that a person may only stand in one election and one is also sound. If accommodation of independents to have multiple candidates is permitted to stand, then the potential outcomes are mathematically unavoidable. But again, a policy choice that is within the remit of Parliament. Now, some general responses. We're moving towards the end, Chairperson. The deposit and the signatures. The principle behind monitoring deposits is to evidence serious intent to contest. And the bill makes it clear that a deposit paid by independent must be less than that paid by a party. And the commission will determine those deposits having followed a public participation process. In respect of signatures as a minimum requirement for candidacy, we propose to ourselves on the 9th, drafting that we think achieves a parity of treatment between independent and unrepresented so we really urge the select committee to consider that matter quite seriously, and there are two components to it. One is introducing a comparable provision for unrepresented parties similar to independents, and that an independent, once they are elected in a legislative assembly, at the next election, they don't necessarily have to fulfill the signature requirement like represented parties. On electoral reform and the proposals that have come the way, the Commission reiterates that the choice of an electoral system involves national policy that cannot be relegated to it. Rather, that the decision must be that of Parliament as a representative body. However, the Commission remains available to contribute in a manner consistent with its constitutional obligations and as determined by Parliament. The exact nature of the national policy conversation on electoral reform is a matter whose institutional and operational modalities have to be worked out. But the Commission is willing to service that national policy conversation on electoral reform. And whether it's possible to introduce constituency in time before 2019. I think the short answer really is that it is not possible. And in the redraft that we submitted, we've proposed an amelioration of a drafting error that was identified. And if that drafting error in schedule item 7 and 12 is accepted, then there'll be consequential adjustments to item 23 and 24 of the schedule. So point taken. Again, item 23, 3G, we accept that it's redundant and stands to be removed. Lastly, in conclusion, Chairperson, there's no alternative system that has been advanced that provides a more proportional outcome than that articulated in the bill. Smaller multi-member constituencies, whilst logistically not an option in the short term, would probably limit variations from complete proportionals, but hold the same inherent problem that independence would still be a separate component, will be a separate component with distortion impacts. While the compartmentalized nature of independence and their votes and seats may have a distorting effect on proportionality, importantly, intra-party proportionality is nonetheless maintained. The bill does ensure an outcome as proportional as mathematically possible. But we are alive to the fact that complete proportion or perfect proportionality is almost an impossibility. But at least the intra-party proportionality is maintained despite the distortions effects of the introduction of independence. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Our submission to the Chair must be read together with the submissions that we've made last week, together with the drafting proposals that have been submitted. Thank you, Chairperson of the Commission. I hand over to you.
Chair of the session, that's our presentation. Thank you very much. We will take questions as may be necessary. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the Independent Electoral Commission and the CEO for your presentation. And I must also confirm that the 7 annexes of models were sent to the committee, and we do have those. The IC has dealt with the technical issues raised by public comments on the bill, and we should also thank you for trying to depict these in very simple terms. That being said, honourable members, we will prepare then for the next presentation, which is from the Parliamentary Legal Services. They will be dealing with the legal issues that were raised in the public submissions that were made to us as a committee. But once again, I would give you another 5 minute breather or leg stretch or whatever it is that you need to do in those 5 minutes, and then we'll convene. It's now 10:11 at 11:15. We'll continue. Please do not log off the platform. Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much, honorable members. I think we'll now move on to the next presentation. Let me also welcome Mr. Njikela, who I see from the platform and was unable to join us in a previous engagement if he was not well. Welcome, Mr. Njikela, and over to you to take us through.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. My name is Solana Halley. I am a legal advisor at the Parliamentary Constitutional Legal Services Office. With me is Ms. Daksha Kassan, who is also a legal advisor. And as you mentioned, on the platform, we do have our senior legal advisor, Mr. Njikela, who has been the lead on the matter before us. I will switch off my video for bandwidth and then just share the presentation. By way of introduction, we'd like to state on the onset that the Chief Legal Services Office has considered the written submissions received and has extracted the legal and constitutional issues herein. The Legal Services has divided the contents of the submissions into overarching themes and has summarized the legal and constitutional issues raised by submitters under the said themes. The submissions have raised many technical issues, for example, the effect of the recalculations, how seats are allocated, why there's only one ballot for provincial legislatures, etc., and which, as members have just heard, has been addressed by the IEC and the department. The purpose of this presentation is therefore limited to addressing certain legal issues. Definitions. The first legal aspect is that of definitions, which can be found in Clause 1 of the Bill. There are five issues raised by submitters. We will deal with each issue separately. The first issue is that many submitters argue that person should be defined as a citizen as per the CC judgment of New Nation. The second is that what was suggested that the committee reconsider the use of the word independent candidate as no such thing in the, as there is no such thing in the political sphere and replace it with non-aligned candidate, which can then be defined as independent candidate means a person contesting an election in a local, provincial, and or national election nominated by the electorate or eligible voters. Thirdly, submitters have said that the bill should not define independent candidate in juxtaposition to a political party. Fourth, it was raised that the reference to region is a contradiction, as there are no voting geographical spheres defined by the bill. The reference is only made in terms of voting districts. And lastly, the inclusion of the term political liaison committee after the deletion of the definition party liaison committee seemed incorrect. Our response is as follows. With regards to the definition of person, the bill does not contain a definition for person. This was a proposal that was discussed in the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs, but when it became clear that the intention was not to include a definition for person, but rather that a candidate and an independent candidate can only be a natural person, the proposal to include the definition of person was not included. Rather, it was decided that the definition of candidate and independent candidate was then amended to include a reference to South African citizens, which both clarifies and that such candidates can only be a natural person and that they must be a South African citizen. Secondly, in response to the submission, that independent candidate be replaced with the term non-aligned candidate. We wish to point out that the New Nation judgment, which this bill seeks to address, uses the term independent candidates, and hence the bill has followed through with this use of terminology. Other acts also use similar terminology. For example, the Local Government Municipal Electoral Act uses the term independent ward candidate. It is therefore best to use familiar terms in the bill. regarding the argument that independent candidates should not be used in juxtaposition to parties. The bill defines independent candidates as a South African citizen contesting an election who is not nominated on a list of parties. The bill distinguishes between two types of candidates, namely those that are nominated on the list of a party contesting an election, party candidates, and those that are independent candidates. By defining independent candidates in this manner, is to make clear that there are candidates that are not party candidates. The definition of region is contradictory. In response to this, we have said as follows. The bill defines region as meaning a territorial area of province. It must be noted that the term region is currently defined as is in Schedule 1A of the Electoral Act. The term region is defined for the purposes of allocating regional seats in the National Assembly. These seats would either be filled by a party candidate or an independent candidate as the bill, as per the bill. According to the bill, the provincial area would serve as a region or a constituency. Parties would be required to submit regional lists, which is defined as meaning a list of candidates in respect of a region prepared by a party for an election of the National Assembly to reflect that party's order of preference of candidates in respect of an allocation of the regional seats in respect of each region. Item 2 of Schedule 1A provides that the Commission must prepare a list of independent candidates contesting an election of the National Assembly in each region in accordance with the Act. Therefore, it is our opinion that the definition for region is not contradictory. Lastly, regarding the submissions relating to the definitions clause of the bill, submitters argue that the bill deletes party liaison committee and inserts political liaison committee after a deleted definition. We argue that it may appear to be incorrect, but this is how it's done as per drafting conventions in the bill, which are amending a principal act, in this case, the Electoral Act. It is done to show exactly where the definition will be inserted into the principal act in alphabetical order. Also, the consolidated version of the act, which incorporates the amendments, will still show the deleted definition with the note saying which act has deleted the definition. This assists in keeping track of all the amendments made to the Principal Act. Independent candidates contesting multiple regions and the non-aggregation of votes. Submissions refer to Clause 6 of the Bill. Section 31A, which provides that the person may be nominated to contest an election as an independent candidate in one of more the region read. More region read with item 5K of Schedule 1A, which provides that where an independent candidate contests more than one region, the votes received across regions for that independent candidate may not be aggregated in order to obtain a seat in the National Assembly. Submitters argue the following, that the provisions are unconstitutional as independent candidates are allowed to contest multiple regions, but it prevents them from gaining national support across regions as votes are not aggregated. They question why should independent candidates who are representative only of a region if it's for a national seat? They argue that the provision hinders independent candidates in obtaining the vote quota in order to obtain a seat. It limits proportionality by contributing to discarding of votes. It limits the rights of independent candidates. It is against the principle of every vote counts. Total votes don't reflect the total seats allocated or the will of the people. They argue that the provision arbitrarily discriminates against independent candidates as parties are allowed to essentially aggregate. And there are a few dissenting views that argue that independent candidates should not be allowed to contest multiple regions as it disenfranchises the voter. Initially, the bill provided for an independent candidate to only contest one region and the region they are ordinary resident in. And we have heard from the department regarding the developments in the PC on Home Affairs and the decisions regarding how or allowing independent candidates to contest more than one region came about. So for the sake of brevity, I will not repeat this detail. However, Section 31A1 of the bill was therefore amended to allow independent candidates to contest more than one region, but only be elected to one seat in the National Assembly. As a further requirement was that when independent candidates contested more than one region, the votes across regions for that independent candidate may not be aggregated. This could arguably be interpreted as infringed upon Section 19(3) of the Constitution, in that it prevents an independent candidate from standing for public office and that any such infringement or limitation of such rights could require a rational connection to a legitimate government purpose, or it could be deemed unconstitutional. As you've heard the IEC explain, an independent candidate contests a seat in the National Assembly via a region. There are 9 regional elections. Each region will have its own quota for obtaining a seat. A seat quota for independent candidates and party candidates are determined only by votes cast in that region, i.e. the quota is calculated with all valid votes in the region divided by 200 seats, the regional seats, plus one. Therefore, votes from other regions may not be used to influence the outcome in a different multi-member constituency or region, as it will distort the calculations. Deposits. Submissions pertaining to deposits refer to Clause 6, Section 31B, 3B, and 31B6, which prescribes that nominations for independent candidates should be accompanied by deposits equal to a prescribed amount, which is less than an independent candidate is contesting in a provincial legislature seat. And further, for a National Assembly seat, it must be less than the deposits paid by registered parties. Submitters argued that we should do away with deposits as they are gates for corruption. There were, however, 2 divergent views. One stating that deposits for independent candidates should be same as that paid by parties, as independent candidates are going to be in the same parliament or provincial legislature as parties. And the second view stating that it was unfair for independent candidates to pay the same deposits as political parties. Our response is as follows. The bill allows for the IEC to prescribe the amount of the deposits to be paid by independent candidates and also provides that the amount to be deposited by an independent candidate contesting an election of a provincial legislature must be less than the amount for contesting national legislation and therefore is in line with Section 27(3)(a) of the Electoral Act, which provides that the Commission may prescribe the amount of the deposit that must be paid by the registered party. Section 27(3)(b) of the Electoral Act then states that the amount to be deposited by the registered party contesting an election of a provincial legislature must be less than the amount for contesting an election in the National Assembly. Similarly, in the local government elections, deposits for parties and independent candidates are prescribed by the IEC. And this can be found in Section 14(1)(b) and Section 2(d) of the Local Government Municipal Electoral Act. Furthermore, our courts have also pronounced on the issue. In EFF versus the Electoral Commission, the court confirmed the legitimacy of the deposits as a requirement to participate in elections. Further, in African Christian Democratic Party versus the Electoral Commission, the court confirmed that deposits evidence the seriousness of a party's intention in contesting elections and that such participation is not frivolous. The signature requirement. Submissions refer to Clause 6 of the bill, which is Section 31(b)(3)(a), which provides that an independent candidate must submit signatures of voters supporting his or her candidature totaling in 20% of the quota of the votes for the seat in the previous comparable election. Submitters argue that independent candidates essentially will be required to submit 18,000 signatures but parties are only required to submit 1,000 signatures. This is in terms of the Electoral Commission regulations. The length of ballot papers should not be a justification to create barriers of entry for independent candidates. And the provision violates Section 19(3)(b) of the Constitution. The Minister has explained the background and history in obtaining the 20% signature, so I won't repeat that here. But in terms of Richter versus Minister of Home Affairs, it was held that the electoral law must aim at enfranchisement and should not unduly restrict the rights of citizens to vote and stand for elections. Although a signature requirement may be necessary to determine the seriousness of an independent candidate to contest an election and to avoid a lengthy ballot paper, it should not be a barrier to stand for elections, and the number of signatures should be reasonable. It is acknowledged that there is a disparity between independent candidates and parties regarding the requirement for signatures. However, proposals have now been put forward to this committee to address the issue of signatures of the signature requirement and independent candidates. And these proposals are the insertion to Section 27 of the Principal Act in order to provide the registered parties who are not represented in a legislative body should also provide an indication for support in the form of signatures, names, and ID numbers of registered voters totaling at 20% of the quota for a seat in the previous election, similarly to the requirement of independent candidates. And secondly, substituting the Bill 31B3A with a new proviso that an independent candidate who had been elected to the National Assembly or provincial legislature as an independent candidate is exempt from this requirement. However, a decision is required from this committee regarding the aforementioned. Regional seats versus compensatory seats. Submitters took issue to clause 21 of the bill, item 1 of Schedule 1A, which states that half the seats are filled by independent candidates and candidates from a list of candidates of parties contesting the 9 regions, and these shall be referred to as regional seats, and half the seats are filled with candidates from the list of candidates and parties, and these shall be referred to as compensatory seats. Submitters argue that the parties have an additional 200 seats, and it gives parties an unfair advantage over independent candidates. The clause affects the seat allocation system, as the quota to obtain seats for parties uses the full 400 in the National Assembly, whereas independent candidates' quota only uses 200 regional seats. There is no such differentiation in the provincial legislature. Some propose 300 regional seats and 100 PR seats. Some argue that compensatory seats violate proportionality, as independent candidates are not taken into account. We wish to submit that the purpose behind the compensatory seat allocation system is to correct the disproportionality in representation in the results of an election. The purpose is to make up the imbalances in the results of plurality or majority voting system. Section 46(1) of the Constitution does not provide for a detailed mechanism in which the electoral system of South Africa must be constructed, but provides for a guideline, including that the electoral system must result in general proportional representation. Although proportional representation is not exclusively limited to political parties, it is practically difficult to provide for proportional representation with independent candidates only holding one seat, even though they may indeed receive more votes than a party. As we understand from the deliberations to date, allowing independent candidates to contest compensatory seats, compensatory proportional representation seats, would distort the proportional representation requirement and also run the risk of the National Assembly seats not being filled. Furthermore, the committee has received a detailed opinion from the Department's Council, who has indicated that reserving half the seats as compensatory seats is constitutionally permissible and rational. Discarding excess votes. Submitters argue that the will of the voters is not reflected, as independent candidates may have more votes than a smaller party, but once they obtain their seats, the rest of their votes are discarded. Options to introduce a single transferable vote was suggested, and some argue that the contesting more than one region increases the possibility of wasted votes and distorts proportional representation. We respond as follows. By the very nature of an independent candidate is that they may only occupy one seat at a time. Once the minimum number of votes required to secure a seat is determined, all additional votes may not practically be utilized. On the face of it, this may appear to be wasted votes, but in effect, it gives the expression to the will of those voters who voted for the independent candidate. The dignity and personhood of those voters who voted for an independent candidate is not infringed, as the will of their votes manifests in the occupation of a seat by the chosen independent candidate. Regardless of whether their vote counted towards the appointment of that independent candidate or whether their vote formed part of the excess votes that went towards the appointment of that independent candidate, but were discarded due to the independent candidate gaining a seat. Furthermore, in terms of other jurisdictions where the plurality system is used, such as India, UK, and Canada, discarded votes are inevitable. Moreover, we've heard from both the department and the IEC this morning in their presentations that there is no electoral system that does not result in discarded votes. Vacancies. Submissions pertaining to this item referred to item 23 of Schedule 1A, which deals with the replacing of vacant independent candidates by A, discarding the votes allocated to independent candidates causing the vacancy, B, discarding the votes and seats allocated to the independent candidate already in office, C, recalculating the results of the region of provincial legislature in terms of sub-item 3. Submissions claim that the calculation ignores seats cast by independent candidates and disenfranchises those who voted for the particular independent candidate. It benefits larger parties. And there were calls for a running mate system as cost-effective and simple as it allows for succession. Our response is as follows. But in terms of Section 47(4) of the Constitution, vacancies in the National Assembly are filled in terms of national legislation. The filling, the department has provided this committee with the history regarding the decisions taken by the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs regarding the filling of vacancies through a by-election, which was considered not to be a workable solution as costly and impractical. Therefore, in order to address the filling of vacancies, a forfeiture calculation was proposed. The running mate option was not encouraged, as voters may not want their candidates replaced as they voted for that particular person. This may not reflect the will of the people. The IEC has explained that while it is true that a seat allocated to an independent candidate that is vacated could be allocated to a political party and not another independent candidate, that the system set out in item 22 and 23 is one of the best that reflects the will of the voter. However, more recently, the IEC has suggested to this committee that item 23.3A, F, and G, and 24C requires an amendment, as the vacancy calculation should not reference the forfeiture calculation of item 7 and 12, but should rather reference item 24, which speaks to the recalculation. A decision would need to be made regarding this proposal. And finally, the recall of members and public representatives. There were a number of submitters who were of the opinion that one of the major shortcomings in the Electoral Act and the bill was that South African public does not have a right to recall public representatives. Our response is that Section 47(3) and Section 106(3) of the Constitution specifically sets out the circumstances as to when a person loses membership of the National Assembly and the provincial legislatures, respectively. These circumstances are when such a person ceases to be eligible as per Section 47(1) and Section 106(1), when he or she is absent from the National Assembly or provincial legislature without permission in the circumstances for which the rules and orders of that National Assembly and provincial legislature prescribes loss of membership, or he or she ceases to be a member of the party that has nominated that person as a member of the National Assembly or provincial legislature. These constitutional provisions provide a closed list of circumstances under which a member can lose membership of a respected legislature. These provisions also do not provide that national legislation may provide for other circumstances as to how members may lose membership. In order to provide for the bill to provide that a public may recall its representatives from either the NA or the PL, it is submitted that a constitutional amendment would be required. It is therefore submitted that this bill cannot provide for the recall of membership. And now for a way forward. As we've heard this morning, there are new amendments that are being proposed by the department and the IEC, which requires consideration and decisions by the committee. However, we wish to reiterate that the Constitutional Court deadline by which the bill must be passed is the 10th of December, and any additional amendments would need to go back to the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs for consideration, as this could possibly impact on the deadline not being met. At this juncture, I'd like to hand over to my esteemed colleague, Mr. Njikela, who would like to conclude on this matter.
You're very soft. I don't know if it's just my connection, but we can't hear you very clearly.
As my colleague has just indicated and laid the foundation for what I'm about to propose. I start with the last point she made, that the deadline for Parliament to pass this bill is the 10th of December, which is less than a month from now. And again, Chairperson, I reiterate what my colleague has said. There are proposals that have been made by the IEC in their presentation of the Parliament. It will appear to us that such an approach is likely to have an impact on the ability of Parliament to meet the deadline. And we say this, Chairperson, without commenting on the merits of what is being proposed. And we think that should be understood correctly. It is not a reflection on the merits of what is being proposed, but we're trying to find a reasonable way to accommodate everybody in terms of the deadline that has been set for us, taking into consideration that we had to request an extension which takes us to the 10th of December. And taking into consideration all of those and the likely impact of entertaining new amendments in the state. And we are not suggesting at all supposing that this should not be considered. And hence what we are going to suggest the committee's review. Like I said, Chairperson, the deadline is less than a month away. And on top of that, Chairperson, any amendment that this committee proposes at this stage will have to be considered by the National Council of Provinces. If it is adopted, then it has to be referred back to the Portfolio Committee or the National. That is exactly the concern in terms of the time frame that we have to deal. And once it is before the Portfolio Committee may have called for further on those proposals. All of these cumulatively may have an impact on the ability of Parliament to use the. And of course, there is a risk of some of these amendments impacting on a number of aspects. And that may have to be considered. For that reason, Chairperson, we would like to make a very strategic suggestion to the committee in terms of how it deals with the amendments as of this day. One proposal we wish to make, Chairperson, is that the acts, the number of acts, and we're referring here to the political party funding act. We are referring to the financial management of parliament and provincial legislatures. We are referring to electronic communication act, and of course the electoral commission act. And for that reason, Chairperson.
Excuse me, Chairperson of the session. It is hard to follow Mr. Njigela. I don't know my connection.
No, it's not you. Hello.
No, I think it's me as well. I just thought it might be my network. But I think, okay, it seems, Mr. Njikela, we're having difficulty in hearing what your proposals are or your strategic suggestions are to the committee. I'm not sure if there is another way that you can submit this to the committee, or maybe just try once again to see if we can hear you.
Chairperson, it could be that it's my computer that has a sound problem. May I propose that my colleague, Daksha Fassan, takes over from here, because I can't pick it up exactly what is the problem with my system.
Now, please continue. Daksha?
Hi, good afternoon, Chair. We will discuss it with Mr. Njikela, and then we will provide options to the committee in writing with regards to the strategic options available to the committee, if that is okay with the committee.
And I'm sure that'll be fine. We intend having a meeting on Wednesday, so perhaps you could do that before the meeting, or and maybe it needs to be expanded in the next meeting. But I propose what is being said is outside of your presentation in a sense, but relates to the Constitutional Court deadline, which puts a time constraint in terms of Parliament progress in the law. But yes, I think we'll accept that from yourself in writing.
Thank you, Chairperson.
All right, then let me thank Legal Services for clarifying some of the legal and constitutional issues as raised by public comments, as well as making references to the departmental and the IEC presentation. And I think in totality, the three presentations address all the comments received from the public. And there's also the Legal Services presentation that reinforced the two submissions proposed by Home Affairs and the IEC in relation to signatures and vacancies, which also further needs the committee to focus on. And obviously, in relation to the Constitutional Court time deadline and expectations from Parliament to try and beat the deadline. I think we'll await what the Parliamentary Legal Services strategic proposals are. But in the meantime, Honourable Members, let me then hand over to yourself to engage with the presentation. I know I said I'll give you 5 minutes in between, but I think we're ready. Because I think the three presentations speak to each other as well. Honourable Members, if you can please give me an indication in terms of your comments and questions that you would want to make in relation to the three presentations. Okay. I see the hand of Honorable Dengo, Honorable Mketwa, Honorable Dodogu, Honorable Maleka. Thank you, colleagues. I think I'll start with apologies for that. I'm in the same room as Dengo. Apologies. We're actually in the same room, so I'm going to mute myself so that Honorable Dengo can take a back.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I wish to address two matters. The one is the fairness in the allocation of seats in the NA and provincial legislatures. The matter of fairness in allocation of seats for independents in the National Assembly and provincial legislatures has arisen. The notion of reserving 200 seats for political parties in the National Assembly excludes independent candidates. Constitutionally, our electoral system is based on proportionality and is designed in its architecture to accommodate this. The entry of independent candidates in such a system, therefore, has to be accompanied, if not in a matter of doing away with proportionality, it is a matter of balancing proportional representation with independent candidates. Therefore, it is a consideration for reserving the 200 seats in the NA for political parties allocated proportionately. In this way, there can be a combination of party lists and independence. The outcome in terms of the constitution must result in a proportional representation of independents and parties. The danger that emerges with independent candidates is that their nature can skew proportionally the will of the electorate. In the NA, for the seats, for the 200 parties that are for the 200 independents, this allows for an equitable formulation. My second question, Chairperson, is the filling of a vacant seat. Indeed, it is important to fill vacancies when they arise for both independent candidates and political parties. It is much easier for political parties, given that any voter votes for a political party can vote for the party at that particular point in time that allows the party to list for a list of candidates to parliament. This is the practice currently, and therefore, as there's no reservations regarding that. The challenge arises with independent candidates, given that independent candidates contest as an individual, and voters have voted for that specific individual. So the transferring of votes between independent candidates will not be consistent with the desire of the voter. The voter voted for that specific individual and not a group. It makes sense to apply a recalculation method to determine the next candidate to secure a seat. It is also logical to disregard the votes for the candidate that created the vacancy in the recalculation. This will give the lower ranking candidate a greater chance of securing a seat resulting from the recalculation. The call for the by-election will put the country into a perpetual election mode, and thus the recalculation becomes easier and more convenient method of filling the vacancies. I thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Dengo, for those comments. Honorable Mketwa.
Thank you very much, Chair. You know, the other day when a minister was presenting this bill to us, I listened to him very carefully. And he made one of the example of a poultry store man and somebody from the community who was quite helpful. When a poultry store man won that election. You know, now and then I used to put this bill into that example. And I'm convinced, Chair, that this bill, this issue of a signature, nobody is responding to it adequately because people will manufacture the signature. And secondly, the rich people are the only one that can succeed in doing whatever that they want, not on the basis of being popular candidate or what. I was listening to all the presenters. And thirdly, I still not convinced, Chair, as to why are we not really going back to the Constitutional Court. I know during COVID, there were issues and this and that, but I still don't understand now to say, look, we are not opposed on what the court has said, but due to the fact that we are not given enough time to study this bill and ensure that everyone out there come up with the right choice, we were then going to circle and say, now we've got something that is workable. This bill is going to divide the country into pieces for now, because nobody has explained. You see, it's difficult for us as members to understand with the intellectuality that with the presentation that they are giving us. But we find it difficult. We still got more questions than answers. I still feel, Chair, that as NSOP, I'm not going to talk to another house, as NSOP, we have never had enough time to look at this bill, and please let the court to be considerate to us to ensure that as well we got enough time for this coming 2024. This bill won't be ready, Chair. That's my comment on it.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Zidovi.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. Once more, let me start by thanking all the presentations. I think once more they were very, very much empowering, and they give us a guide in terms of what is it that we need to do under the circumstances. Now, my contribution in this regard, Honorable Chairperson, is that as the NCOP, we have a responsibility to save this country from an imminent constitutional crisis if we do not ensure that by the 10th of December we adopt this particular bill and the president himself sign it into the law. And therefore, as the NCOP, Honorable Chair, we cannot afford that situation. I'm raising this particular issue, Honorable Chair, because the comments as they were presented here this morning, even in the past, they demonstrate the fact that the people of this country, different organizations and all of that, have presented a number of proposals. And some of these proposals form part of what the Concord has indicated us to do, and some of them fall outside the scope that was determined by the Constitutional Court. And therefore, what we need to do as this committee is to do precisely what the Concord has requested us to do. And the Concord, in this particular instance, Honorable Chair, has said to us, we must amend the Electoral Act insofar as accommodating the independents. It has not directed Parliament to amend the electoral law. And for me, that is fundamental. And if we can stick to that, it will help us as Parliament to meet the deadline. Let us consider all the necessary aspects which will be geared towards accommodating the independence as directed by the Concord. And I think this is what we need to do. As to what happens in the future, we must then propose that we need to look at our electoral system in totality, and that can happen post this process of adopting the bill in line with what the Constitutional Court has requested us to do. And I think the temptation keeps on being there that we want to go beyond the scope of the Concord judgment. And my respective view is that let us avoid doing that, because that will not help us. It will not help Parliament to meet the deadline, but rather it will put us into a constitutional quagmire that we must avoid. This is the first point that I want to make. But the second point relates to the fact that those who propose the constituency-based model are saying that they want to enforce accountability. Who said that the current system doesn't, with all its checks and balances, doesn't afford accountability? And for me, in all the experiences that are there globally, you cannot say that this constituency-based system is the best to an extent that it enforces accountability at the expense of other electoral systems. That argument is neither here nor there. Now, my appeal, Honorable Chairperson, is that let us do what the Concord has requested us to do. And the 7 points which were presented to us today, whether it is with regard to the vacancies, it is with regard to the 200-200 model in terms of the complementary seats and the regional seats, fairly accommodate what the Constitutional Court requires us to do. And that also includes the fact that we ensure that independent candidates contest in more than one region. As it was pointed out to us, initially, it was proposed that independents can only contest in one region, but for now, it accommodates independents in all the regions. And for me, it goes a long way in terms of addressing this particular issue. And the other issue with regard to the signature requirement, I think the proposal that is on the table is that the 20% must apply to both new political parties as well as independents. In that way, it is fair to the independents themselves. In general, Honorable Chair, what I'm trying to say is that it is inevitable that the bill, as it currently stands, it requires certain amendments from us that we must recommend to the House, and we have identified those particular areas, and this is what we must do. But going forward in the future, we must then insert, as it is proposed in this submission, that we need a committee of experts. That committee must look at the whole electoral system and make the necessary recommendations to the House, to Parliament, to government, to IEC, and it must encourage the civil society to participate in that regard. But with all the limitations that we have currently, Honorable Chairperson, I think we must support the proposals as they are. And in addition to that, we must fast track this particular process, because as I pointed out, inevitably it will have to go back to the National Assembly to look at those particular areas that we have inserted, and therefore we move this particular process as expeditiously as possible to ensure that we meet the deadline. And for me, this is doable if we can just stick to what the Constitutional Court has requested us to do, namely that include the independence, and it has not directed us to come with a new electoral system. And for me, that is the crux of the matter. I'll pause therefore now, Honorable Chair, but I think this is how we must really move this particular process forward to ensure that at the end of the day, we are constitutionally compliant and not put the country into an imminent constitutional crisis. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Dodogo. Honorable Maleka. Honorable Maleka. Maleka, I think your speaker is not. Maleka, could you try once more? Okay. Perhaps let me then move on to Honorable Soletu. Honorable Soletu?
Morning, Chair.
Yes.
Can you hear me, Chair?
Yes, please continue.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon, Chair, and good afternoon to the Minister, to the DM, and to the Chair of the Electoral Commission, and to the presenter and to everyone. Chair, I am not going to dwell in terms of my views without having read what the legal advisor from the senior legal advisor from Parliament is going to suggest us to bypass the issue of the deadline. But something that keeps so that is very consistent since we have started deliberating on this particular bill has been the issue of deadline. And one has to wonder, is it really, really, really fair on us as members of the National Council of Provinces to be put under such pressure? You know, and with that, I would just want the minister. Yes, just to share with us in terms of public participation, how long have they dealt with this particular bill as the members of the National Assembly? I just need them to, you know, the Department of Home Affairs just to tell us as the members of the NCOP and the country as a whole, how long did they have had as the NA in terms of public participation to solicit views, you know, and make amendments there and reconsider. How long of a time were they granted, you know, or how long time did they take? And also, Chair, and I appreciate what the minister has taken us in terms of 1996, because in 1996, nobody thought about independence wanting to contest provincial and local and national elections when it came to the terms of signatures. I'm also, you know, grateful to the fact that the percentage started at 50, it went down to 30, and now we are standing at 20. But mine is always about the fairness. You know, why did they stick to 20? Why didn't they go down and say maybe 5%? You know, 5% of the signatures for independence? Because I still feel that it's not fair. Why do I say so? As much as political parties are given 1,000 signatures, go to the IEC website and you'll find that there are actually political parties that were not even successful on national election to get even 1,000 votes. They were not even, it was not even possible for them to get 1,000 votes. So the issue of fairness, one has to look at both sides and also consider history and consider election results, because there is no guarantee that you need to get so many signatures to be able to get to be you know to be regarded as a person that is that can stand for public office. And also, Chair, one would appreciate the fact that new parties, in terms of the proposed amendment, new parties are also going to comply in terms of the percentage that we would agree on as the committee. I don't have a problem with that. But the issue that I'm more worried about, Chair, is the issue of public participation and the pressure that has been put on us as the members of this particular committee to come, you know, and make decisions, say, Amban, it's fine, we are happy with it. Chair, I think that's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to elaborate and raise my views and comments in terms of whatever has been proposed, but I just feel that we have been dealt a blow by not being given enough time to...
There's a point of order you made at the time.
Thank you very much, Honorable Suleku. The next member is Honorable Bartlett.
Yes, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Sorry for not switching on my video. But Chair, just in respect of the 200 regional seats in question 4, is it possible just to give clarity on their seats because we're located across the 9 provinces and regions on a proportional basis. And let's take into account the number of registered voters for each province. And then on the other one, on the signature requirement, Chair, we believe that there should be a remedy to equalize the requirement for signatures by both independent candidates and new political parties registering to participate in the elections. So will this ensure fairness, Chair? And then therefore, all the dependents and unrepresented parties should prove that a certain percentage of the quota for one seat in the province or region they are contesting. And then, Chair, also to appreciate and say thank you very much on this very informative presentation that we had. It's not the first time that we engage with these presentations, but I think the views are getting more clear and all of us understand now really what we need to do. And I think everybody who's listening know what to do. So Chair, and I will support all the departments. I recommend making all my honorable members, I recommend them make Chair. And also the questions asked, I think the our chairperson, Honorable China, covered most of the issues that I wanted to raise. And just to say thank you very much, I would really appreciate the hard work, and also you as a steering lady in this presentation and the bills. Really appreciate it. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Bartlett. Honorable Mikulaki?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you for the inputs received this morning. Chairperson, I just have a few comments and requests, not so much questions. The first one is, Chairperson, the mere fact that I have heard more than once today that a panel will have to be put together at a later stage and reconsider amendments to this bill that we're currently considering is in itself proof that this is a rush job. Now, Chairperson, you and I signed and took an oath binding us firstly to the Constitution, but also serving this country to the best of our abilities. And it is not serving this country or the people by rushing a bill through Parliament in this way. I will not be rushed in doing my job and my duty towards this country, not by any department, by any minister, or quite frankly, by anyone at all. We have a duty to make sure that the bill that goes through this committee is one that's well thought through. And I do think that those members who say that we can't afford to miss a deadline don't quite realize that we also can't afford to have a half-baked bill dictating to the country what their democratically elected parliament should look like for the next 5 years. I mean, it's absolutely ludicrous to think that we can rush through something that will determine what our democratically elected parliament will look like for the next 5 years, and then to try and say, but we'll come back and we'll fix what we couldn't fix because of a deadline. If it's necessary for us to try to see how the deadline can be extended and what needs to be done in that regard, then we need to start doing that. Because if we make amendments to this bill, and we're going to have to make amendments to this bill, it's still going to have to go to the National Assembly as well. That's just my first comment. My second one, Chair, is a request to you that when we start with the deliberations, and I believe the first meeting for that purpose will be on Wednesday this week, I would just like for us, before we start looking at the content of the bill itself, for us as a committee to deal with two very important procedural issues before we get to that. And the first one is that we have a discussion about the public participation around this bill in the NCOP cyclist, and also a discussion about the tagging. We have received a presentation on that, but I do think that these two issues first need to be sorted and clarified as procedural issues before we start looking at the substance of the bill itself. So my request is just that when we start deliberating, that public participation and tagging are placed right at the top of the agenda for us to clear that and get that sorted out before we continue. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Mikulakis. Honourable Matamai.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, Rasana, I ke kwetsa ka Constitutional Court e re retseng ka teng, e re kopileng kwetsa ka teng. Go bana re tla se ga Constitutional Court le Constitution. But re tshwanwa ke go lebella pele gore ntho e re etsang a re tshwentse re etse re potlakile o re shebisise. Go bana ra tseba bone bana di candidate tse di independent tsena di tswa kae. Gobaneng di sa batla gore di joine di-organization tse dingwe tsena. They don't want to be lead, they want to lead. So tshwanetse re shebisise pele gore a ntho ena tshwanetse re beye monwana o re shebisise pele gantle. Ke a leboga, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Honourable Dangle.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think we should consider very carefully what Honorable Dodovo has said. We don't want to plunge the country into a constitutional quagmire or challenges. That we need to look at the passing of this bill with amendments that we will consider and send that back to the National Assembly to consider. However, on the larger question of electoral reform and the question of constituencies, maybe as coming out of this, we should recommend that a committee be established of experts and parliamentarians to discuss the entire electoral system, as was done in 1994, that we need a committee such as that, and then possibly the convening of a conference or anything else in the for that to discuss that matter, to take that particular procedure forward. But I think we were compelled by the courts to do undertake a task in this particular matter. Let us undertake the task and recommend at the end that such a committee be established to look at that. I thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Dangle. Honourable Dodovo?
Yes, Honourable Chair, Honourable Malika has just sent me a message on the question that she wanted to ask. And if you allow me, let me just ask that question on her behalf. She's saying that it is inevitable that there will be the so-called discarded votes or wasted votes in the elections, and that any elections the world over in any electoral system, you find that situation obtained. And that given that a threshold is required for a seat, it means that some political parties and independent candidates at some point will either have lower votes to secure a seat or have more votes for one seat but fewer for more than one seat. we agree that there is little that can be done if independent candidate A is required to have, say, 40,000 votes to get a seat, and the candidate only has 35,000. The vote doesn't reach the required threshold for a seat, and therefore nothing can be done with such votes. In the same vein, if a political party has secured 100,000 votes and a seat requires 40,000 votes, the political party can only secure two seats. Again, the remaining 20,000 of the 100,000 votes will have to be discarded. And this is indeed a practice the world over has, and it has been part of our electoral system since 1994. A further example can be in the case of ward councillors. The votes for the ward councillor who lost the ward in the elections are discarded. There is nothing that can be done with such votes. I think this is what she sent me, and the point that she's making is very, very much profound. But in addition to that, Honorable Chair, I want to just make some two reflections. There is no rush in this bill. We acting on the basis of the judgment of the Concord. The Concord was very clear. It gave us this particular matter.
Point of order, please.
Well, I don't understand, because we're having deliberations. If you want to make a point, please raise your hand and make a point.
No, but Chair, what I'm trying to say, I don't think it's fair on members to respond to other members in terms of their views, because I've allowed Honorable Dango to respond, and now Honorable Dodov is trying to respond to what Honorable Mikalakis has said, and I think that is not fair. Thank you, Chair.
I'm not responding to anything, Honorable Chair. I'm making a contribution based on the three presentations that we had. And based on that, issues are cutting across. Issues are cutting across. Yeah. All that I'm saying, Honorable Chair, is that we had 2 years given by the Concord to finalize this matter. And bills or matters of this magnitude don't require 2 years. This is about our country that adopted a particular electoral system in 1994. And the imperatives of that judgment say we must correct this within 2 years. And to an extent that the magnitude of this particular matter was great, Parliament had to request an extension of 6 months. And we are here, Honorable Chairperson, we are given that responsibility as representatives of the people to sort out this particular matter. And I'm saying that we cannot undermine the judgment of the Concord, and the deadline is a 10. And I think within our means, we can achieve that. We have received in the last 3 weeks several presentations about this particular matter. We have internalized what experts, department, IEC, and our legal advisors have got to say about some of the important amendments that we need to consider. And I think the ball is in our court. We must do exactly that. And that is what we are doing, not undermining the electorate as such. And I think we are on course. We need to continue along those particular lines up until we conclude this particular work. But what is quite clear, what is quite evident, Honorable Chair, is that our country needs to revisit its electoral system, and that is what we are doing. And within the limited time and the constraints that we are facing, we think that this is a good fundamental point of departure that we must follow to ensure that at the end of the day, we do not jeopardize the future of this country. We do not put our country into disrepute, and the elections are held in line with the imperative of the Constitution. And for me, that is quite important. And listening to the three presentations, I think they are trying their level best to ensure that we realize that objective. And this is what, as members of Parliament, need to do to ensure that we take these particular processes forward. Nothing more, nothing less. I think we are on course. The bill is with us. We need to process it accordingly within the limited constraints, because we cannot close our eyes for the fact that by the time this particular process, it has to be concluded. And we are getting some proposals on how we must navigate that particular process, and I think we need to move along those particular lines. That is an additional contribution that I'm making on top of what I said earlier on Honorable Chairperson. Thank you.
Okay, no, thank you very much, Honorable Dodobu. I'm not seeing any more hands. I agree. Well, I don't also want to, this is something I think I also need to clarify. We're not necessarily responding to what Honorable Mikulaki said, but I think it's not correct if certain views are being distorted in this meeting. Whereas, you know, I think in our next meeting we will go into more details on certain matters. But I think it's important to clarify what Honorable Mikulaki also has said. I think we're saying that the engagement on electoral reform is something that South Africans should continue to engage on, and that this may be a policy proposal for the coming parliament. And I think no way is it being said that the current system is flawed. And this is what we're dealing with regard to the current system to address issues of equality amongst other issues. So I think let us not distort some of the information that comes forth in these presentations. I'm going to also, with regard to another question related to the National Assembly process and the timeline for public participation, I don't think that's a matter for the minister to respond to, but also I think the context of how we deal with this bill is in terms of it being tagged as a Section 75 bill. I'm going to perhaps the IEC to have some closing comments. I think members largely raised comments. There might have been one or two questions. You may respond to the questions. I'll start with the commission. I'll then go to the minister. And then take it from there. Can we start with the commissioner?
Chairperson, thank you very much. There were not many questions that we had to deal with. I'll seek to look at the issues that were raised that we needed to respond to, and I will ask the CEO and his team to deal with the balance as may be necessary. The first question is the first question that was raised. In fact, it was even more of a comment in itself. Also, was the question that related to the issue raised by the court. In other words, what it was that we were looking at, and we understand this to mean that the insertion of independent candidates in the elections of the National Assembly and the provincial legislature. That's really what we understood and are responding to. The issue in respect of the allocation of seats and the fairness reserve in the reservation of the compensatory portion of that, I think we understand this to be a balancing of the practical choices versus the requirements of the Constitution. In other words, we have a given. The introduction of independent candidates is going to cause or induces an imbalance in proportionality. It renders the system to an extent not to be proportional. And what we believe we have before us is to then fix as far as is possible that in terms of the constitutional requirement, which says we must seek to, in general, have proportionality. There was an issue or comment raised in respect of transferring of votes. I think that is a policy thing, but we understand that policy issue is an issue that this committee is dealing with. It is unfortunate that we will deal with the strategies to deal with the issue beyond this point. But that is indeed a relevant question that is before this committee, and we are anxious that these matters are addressed. Chair, those are the issues broadly that we are satisfied that we have dealt with the issues that were put to us as the commission. I'm going to ask the CEO to see if there's anything that I have missed, and then we present this back to you, Chairperson. We hand back to you. CEO, let's check with you and the team if there's anything that I have missed.
Chair, I've checked with the team. There's nothing that is within our remit that requires us to further offer comment at this stage.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Minister, over to yourself.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The first issue I want to deal with, Honorable Mthethwa, I seem to have heard him complaining that the issue of signatures was not adequately explained and that he has listened carefully. I don't know whether Chairperson, because you want honorable members here to make informed decisions, whether we need to explain again why signatures are needed, as they've always been from 1996. Signatures are needed as a qualifying criteria, Chairperson. Firstly, for political parties, because we don't want any person just to wake up and form a political party when there's only one person or two people in that. We want to see the mayor support, and that is indicated by signatures. Now coming to independent, we don't want anybody just to wake up anywhere and said, I've heard that independents are allowed in parliament and I want to stand. Then we start developing a ballot paper, which has got a million names on it. We don't want that. We want some form of seriousness and demonstration of tangible support. That's why signatures are needed. And as I've said, they've been needed from 1996. I do not know why they suddenly will become a problem. The issue here is the equality in the number of signatures that are needed between independents and political parties. And today we are giving you a proposal on how to remedy that. And the IEC has also done the same. Then Mr. Mthethwa is also asking, why don't you go back to the Constitutional Court? So that to extend before 2024, well, it's up to the NCOP to do so. But remember, the National Assembly has already gone to the Constitutional Court that they cannot finish their work within the time given, and they were given 6 months. So it is the right of the NCOP to do so. As to whether the Constitutional Court will agree or not, or as to whether it's a wise move, I'm leaving it to the NCOP. Mr. Seleku, about public participation, that should be the question directed at the National Assembly, not myself. The second question, Mr. Seleku, you are complaining about the number of signatures. You are saying you don't want 20%, you want 5%. Yes, when it started, it was 50, but after deliberations, it went to 30, then to 20. Now you say you want it to go to 5%. I may as well ask, why not 2%? Why not 1%? Why not 0.5%? I'm sure you understand the nature of my question, that if we just keep on throwing numbers around without anybody trying to approximate them to some practical issue, some practical instance, it's quite a big problem. So people thought 20% will be adequate, taking to the number of votes that were needed. I mean, taking on the number of votes that were needed to win a seat in the last election. And we believe it's reasonable. Otherwise, if we keep on playing around with numbers, because the 5% you are choosing is still higher than what political parties are needed to have in order to register a party. So I think the most important here is the equality between what is required in terms of signatures between a political party and an independent, and that will be adequate. Mr. Metchelagis, I can see very emotionally and confidently he's saying no one, no one can force him to do a thing in a particular period, neither the minister or whoever. That's what he said. I just want to advise him that he's not correct at all. There is somebody who has got the power to do so, and that is the Constitutional Court or the Constitution, because we are a constitutional democracy where the court has got the last say. So it's wrong to believe that if you are a member of parliament, nobody can force you. You can be forced by a court of law, and they've done so. We've always been a constitutional democracy from the beginning. And I want to refer Mr. Metchelagis to the Hansard. If you get the Hansard and read the speech given by Honorable Buthelezi, Honorable Minister Mr. Buthelezi, when he was the Minister of Home Affairs, when the Immigration Act was debated in 2002, if you check on the Hansard, he says, this bill I'm passing is not the way I wanted it to be, but because there's a constitutional court judgment that forces us to pass it at a particular date. In other words, he said, because there's a deadline set by the constitutional court judgment, I am forced to finalize and pass it today. But otherwise, it's not what I would have liked it to be. So there's always been court cases, and there are many, where the court gives a particular period and say, finishing this particular period. And they've got the power to do so. And it's not only about this bill. You can go to court rulings. There are many times where ministers were instructed by the court to come to ask parliament to finish something within a particular period. In this case, we're given 24 months. The National Assembly went back to the Constitutional Court to ask them for extension. It was extended by 6 months. And that's what it is. And we've got to work within that. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much, Minister.
And Chairperson, sorry, just one small thing. I'm sorry. Please bear with me just for 1 minute.
Yes, please continue.
Yes, Mr. Metchelagis, the proposal about the panel, and I want to correct, you said the panel to amend the present bill. No, it's not amending the present bill. It's about debating the type of electoral system that South Africa must have. That is the proposal, it's not that is being made. It's not amending the bill here that you may pass. It's about an electoral system. Whether the country can continue with this present electoral system, or whether it needs constituencies, or what type of electoral system is suitable for us. That is the proposal. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Minister, and thank you very much, Commissioner, for those comments and or responses. I think our members broadly, in terms of the three presentations that we received from the departments, the IC and Parliamentary Legal Services, I think there is agreement. And perhaps let me just pull up, you know, some of those issues that have been raised in the presentation.
My hand is up, Chair.
Seleku, do you, okay, please continue, Seleku. Sorry, I thought we were, okay.
No, thank you, Chair. No, since we are busy with corrections, I just wanted to correct what the minister said. Honorable Seleku did not say, I want 5%. Honorable Seleku was asking, since you gave us history in terms of where you started, when you were deliberating on this bill, you started at 50%, you went to 30, and then you agreed on 20. So I just wanted more clarity in terms of what has led for you as a department in the National Assembly to arrive at 20% in October. That's all I was saying. I did not say I want 5%. Thank you very much.
Okay, no, thanks for clearing the air, Honorable Seleku. But let me then continue that just in terms of the summary of the key issues that were raised in the presentation, there's the issue of signatures with regard to the equalizing of signatures to ensure the issue of fairness. The other issue with regard to the vacancies in seats. This is to address the comments related to an error in the method to award a seat left vacant by an independent who had been elected to more than one legislative assembly. And there is a proposed amendment by the IEC to Schedule 1A to address this matter. The third issue is with regard to the independent candidates contesting more than one region. And I think here the department proposed the possible inclusion of a rule governing the seat that seats would be allocated to an independent candidate in the event that they receive a seat in more than one region. And also the submissions with regard to broader electoral reform post the 2024 elections. And I think these are matters for further discussion by the committee. The other issue raised in terms of the discussions here is with regard to procedural matters. The issue with regard to tagging, anyway, I thought we had discussed it in our previous meeting, but if members still want to put that on the, to still discuss it, I mean, that should not be a problem. And I think with regard to public participation as well, I know this is not the first contentious bill in the public domain that we're dealing with. In terms of the bill also being tagged as a Section 75, but I think it's also a matter we can deal with in the next meeting. I think with regard to the timeline to deal with the processing of the bill, there are sentiments that we can expeditiously deal with the matter, but I think the legal section is also ready to make some kind of proposal around a strategic approach in relation to the Constitutional Court deadline. And I think that they said that they will do that in writing. And as I said earlier, this is also a matter that we will deal with in our next meeting. Other members and colleagues, our next meeting will be on Wednesday, this coming Wednesday. But let me thank you for all the various inputs that have come through this process. I think it only enriches the discussion on the various matters that have come to the fore. And we will then continue this discussion in our next meeting. And with that said, this meeting is declared closed and we'll continue on Wednesday. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson.